Now, you'll have heard on the news that Scotland is becoming the first country in the world to introduce minimum unit pricing, known as the MUP, and this is for alcohol. It's after the Supreme Court rejected the Scotch Whiskies Association's challenge against the plans. Now, the result means there's a renewed call for MUP to be introduced in Northern Ireland, but we don't have any Muppets to introduce it. No, well, that's such an obvious old gag. Right, so would it be a good idea? Let me speak to Christopher Snowden, who is from really the Institute of Economic Affairs. He's the head of Lifestyle Economics. Christopher, a lot of people suggesting that if this can corral people and, I suppose, rein them back in relation to their abuse of alcohol, it's an excellent idea. You don't think so?
No, I don't. I'm very doubtful about whether it will actually have an effect on the people it's supposed to be targeting. What will definitely happen is it will have effect on the vast majority of drinkers who buy alcohol below 50p a unit, which is most of us. I mean, this is not going to affect just a small range of very cheap products. It's going to affect most of the beer, cider and spirits sold in the off-trade and even quite a bit of the wine.
So you feel that people who are less well off are just going to be paying more money for their drink?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just a policy that clobbers the poor. It basically just exempts the rich. It's middle and low earners. You know, but people on average incomes will be very much affected by this as well. I think drinkers in Scotland are going to pay something like an extra £100 million a year. And for what? For the speculative benefit that it might rein in, as you say, a few alcoholics, people who really buy alcohol at any price. Anyway, it relies on a basic fallacy, actually, I think. It looks at things like white cider, which are relatively undertaxed and therefore the things that people with drink problems turn to. And it says, well, we've got alcoholics drinking white cider because it's cheap, so let's make it more expensive. But alcoholics will always buy the cheapest stuff. They'll just have to pay more for it. What I think will happen after minimum pricing is there won't really be any white cider on the market anymore. There won't be any demand for it because it'd be too expensive. All the units of alcohol will obviously be the same price. What I think we'll see with alcoholics and street drinkers is a shift back to spirits and even things like meths, or indeed substitutes like the drug spice. What I don't think you'll see is suddenly a whole bunch of people with serious addiction problems going clean.
It might, however, discourage people who aren't yet at alcoholic level from getting so deep into drinking. I'm talking about university students, I'm talking about young clubbers. They just might begin to think, listen, this isn't being practically given away in supermarkets, so let's budget more.
Again, I don't see that happening, and I think that is to misunderstand why people develop alcohol problems in the first place, and it's the same with gambling problems or overeating. These are not problems that arise because the product is marketed or is sold cheap or is available. These are much more deep-seated psychological issues which people get over once they've got treatment. You're not going to help their recovery by making them even poorer, and I think you're actually going to make them much worse off.
Do you reckon it's going to benefit the hotel and pub industry?
No, I don't. I know that some pubs have the hope that if the price difference between the off-trade and on-trade is narrowed, that they will benefit. I think there's very good reason to think it'll have the opposite effect. I think if you make people poorer, which is what minimum pricing is going to do, they're going to have less money to spend in the pubs. I don't see any mechanism by which people say, well, my cans of lager and my cans of cider are more expensive, so I'll go to the pub and pay two or three times as much to drink the same things. I think actually people, if you've got a limited budget, you want to drink a certain amount every week, you're going to see the price of your off-licence alcohol go up. Perversely, you're going to buy more of the off-licence stuff and less of the pub stuff, precisely because the pub stuff is still much more expensive.
Yeah, just stay with me, Christopher, please, because the other side of the argument, I'm sure, will come from Colin Neal, who's from Hospitality Ulster. Colin, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
Not one point there from Christopher that would buy into your theory on this.
Yes, and I respect his position, as I respect all the research and academics that prove the opposite. You know, we only have to look at the University of Sheffield's research, which was bespoke. It was done purely in Northern Ireland. We're not talking here about Scottish figures, to see the actual impact, the results that it could bring about. And I guess, you know, it's the first in the world to do it. Yes, it's unproven, but it's the old line, we can't do it because it's never been done before. I mean, when we add costs to a year, the average drinker, the research says, will pay £4.70 a year more. That's £4.70 a year. And when you take Northern Ireland's context, that 6% of the people in Northern Ireland drink 44% of the alcohol. You know, it is a targeted measure to try and stamp out the alcohol sold at pocket money prices. And this isn't a cure-all. This is not going to tackle the recognised abuse of alcohol by wealthy people that, you know, £4.70 a year would make no difference to. And it is about trying to do a range of measures, but I think we just can't stand back. You know, I represent the licensed trade, and we have to accept, you know, it's a controlled substance and has to be treated with respect and sold that way.
Yes, but you really want it to be much more expensive in supermarkets. That's your hope, isn't it?
Well, no, there's a fallacy, and I know we discussed earlier. I mean, this is not about pricing people back to the pub or whatever, because it won't. What we will gain as an industry, we will gain a second level benefit in that. Hopefully, we'll see less duty using the sledgehammer to crack a nut approach, because if for years duty has been used, you know, to just up the price across the board. And what actually just happens there is, one, I mean, we right across Europe, the UK collects 40% of the duty collected in Europe, yet more we have some of the highest drink problems. If you look at a pint of beer here, 54p in a pint of beer is duty. In Germany, it's 5. And we still have all the drink problems. So it shows just blanking it on doesn't work. And why it doesn't work is because there's not a legal requirement to pass on that tax. What actually happens is the supermarkets just absorb it or push it back to the suppliers. Their power means they can turn back to the supplier and go, you take the price cut. Whereas the small guy passes it on, has no choice because he doesn't have that margin. So we just see cheap alcohol remain. So this is a very targeted measure. Yes, it's the first time, you know, the research says it'll work. And I think we all have a duty to try and see if it does.
Will the next generation of Scottish drinkers be healthier?
I would hope so. I would hope even more so that our generation of drinkers, you know, will have a responsible social attitude to alcohol consumption and not see it. You only have to look at websites that review these cheaper than pocket money drinks, where it doesn't taste like much but will get you drunk is the caption. You know, there's something wrong if you're just drinking to get drunk.
That's a very good point, Christopher Snowden, because that's what people are doing. Those who are going for the really cheap alcohol, they're just drinking to get high, drinking to get drunk. So it's a sad state of affairs that has to be addressed by someone, and there's got to be praise for the Scottish authorities for having a go at it.
I don't think so at all. I think it's actually quite a contemptible thing to do, to deliberately target poor people, make them pay more money for a product that you know they're going to buy and not even get tax revenue from it. At least if you tax something, you can use the tax revenue for good services. I think it's a horrendously snobbish measure, actually. As I say, it explicitly exempts champagne drinking by the rich and the expensive wines. And deliberately clobbers people on low incomes who actually drink less on average than rich people do. And I think the hospitality industry is making a big mistake by getting into the temperance lobby on this issue, because they will be going after the pubs and clubs as well. The Sheffield research mentioned, which, by the way, is entirely theoretical and is drawn up by people who have been campaigning for this particular measure. The Sheffield model also models what would happen if we had a minimum price for pubs and clubs. And that minimum price is a lot higher than what they're proposing for the off-trade. They're going to go after advertising. They're going after licensing laws. I think temperance activity like this needs to be resisted by anybody who's in the alcohol industry in any capacity.
Okay, Christopher Snowden, thank you. One final point from Colin. Are you hand-in-hand with the temperance lobby? I've accused you of many things. I never thought that I would be suggesting that to you.
No, and I wouldn't say that either. We are about responsible consumption of alcohol, not trying to be the party police, But I think just on the last point about this picks out on poor people, there is a health inequality for the less well-off that this actually starts to help address. And as I said, we need other measures. You know, there are people in, you know, the large houses in the fancy areas drinking far too much, and other measures will need to be used. There's no such thing as a silver bullet.
Okay, Colin Neal from Hospitality Ulster and Christopher Snowden, Head of Lifestyle at the Head of Lifestyle Economics at the Institute of Economic Affairs. Thank you for your time this morning. Your opinions, 90333105. Are you concerned about minimum pricing, the minimum unit pricing, the MUP idea being introduced in Northern Ireland? We're a considerable way away from it here. It's Scotland that we're talking about. Eddie's got a point. Good morning, Eddie.
Morning, Frank. Frank, I could give you a few years. I'm going to tell you something. See right through the troubles and up till today. If you want to know, you can drink in Belfast 24 hours a day. If you know where to go, you knock a back door and it's hello Dungannon and know your knock and you get in.
Sorry, I totally missed the bit about Dungannon. I hope you're not revealing any secrets here. But what is that, the code you say? Are you from Dungannon? No, I'm not.
No, it's the old saying, come in Dungannon and know you're not.
Oh, come in Dungannon and know you're not. What's that old saying?
Come in Dungannon, I know you're not.
Yeah, hold on. I want to get my head around this now. Do you have to say it with a certain accent? Come in Dungannon.
Frank, no. That's just a saying. You just wrap a back door of certain establishments and you can drink in Belfast 24 hours a day.
I know, but Eddie, hold on. What does the old saying mean? Come in Dungannon and know you're not. What does that mean?
It means you're welcome.
And why is it come in Dungannon?
I don't know, Frank. That one you're going to have to sort.
But you're the one that's using it. You know, James, you can look around with sayings that nobody else says without having some understanding of what it means.
It's exactly what it means. Come in. But
Dungannon, I know you're not.
Yeah.
It's like some sort of code for trying to get logie.
But
yeah, but go ahead. You're saying 24/7 you can drink in Belfast. Can you still drink in Belfast 24/7?
Well, I started off during the Troubles doing it, and I can still do it. Only I am, as they say, a wee bit older than you, so I don't try that long.
Yeah, but is it important for you to be drinking in company, Eddie? Do you when you look for somewhere that's providing drink at 3 o'clock in the morning, or somewhere that's providing drink at 7 o'clock in the morning? Are you hoping to be sitting where there's a bar, where there's optics, where there are tables? Are you not content to get the cheap alcohol from the supermarket?
Frank, it's sitting in front of me at the minute, and no, I just like to get out for a few hours during the day. Now I don't go out that much at night.
And how much of your day would be taken up with alcohol within arm's length of you?
Right, we'll start from about 6 o'clock this morning.
Now what would you have taken between 6 and 5 to 10 now?
I've taken my tablets along with a glass of cider, and I think I have had about my 4th gin. And I am going down to town now to have a wee bit of free time, do a bet, and enjoy myself for a couple of hours out, and then come home.
Mm-hmm. Is it advisable to actually take your medication with the cider?
Frank, I don't... Well, excuse me. My late great doctor, who happened to be a man from Kenya, actually told me that when I was taking tablets, if I took drink, it made no difference.
Yeah, so your body, maybe by being a regular alcohol user, your body is prepared for it, or is used to it. It's certainly not recommended for people generally. And then this afternoon when you come home, will you be looking for somewhere else to go to have the comradeship of other people, the camaraderie?
Frank, I will come in today, and you know the first thing I'll do? I will pour another gin and have a drink.
And that cycle continues through the day?
Continues every day, Frank.
And
because,
how...
Because... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. But, you know, you were going to say because?
Because I got a letter from a doctor. And to be honest, it was pissed. Because what he done was, he sent me a letter, 4 pages. And the fourth page was a prescription for 84 heart tablets. And nobody had ever told me I had a heart problem. And that guy has got me back worse because I had cut down on my drinking. So I am going out on a blaze of glory. And if your research team can find a song from, who is it? Kenny Rogers, yeah, Blaze of Glory. If you could play that for me, it would be very much appreciated because that is the way I am going.
Well, Eddie, you look after yourself, fella. We don't want you going out in any way, but we'll play the song for you. There's no doubt about that. But listen, you look after yourself and just if you can, just ease up on it a wee bit if you can. I really appreciate you coming on the show, fella.
Mr. Clean, before you go away, that the rain outside the Europa is the worst that's ever been in years. So nobody hated you when you asked them to stick a gonge bonger down it.
Yeah, well, this is true. This is a different story altogether. Eddie, thank you very much indeed. The minimum price of alcohol, the minimum unit pricing affecting different people in different ways.